time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you back on. As you guys know, last week I got hit with COVID, but we're back, and I'm back. I've never felt so good to be back on the podcast, but it is so good. You value health, especially when you don't have it there for a while. But anyway, we're here Monday, December 13th. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're literally so grateful to have you as our listeners. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. We've got in the Hot Topic segment, Debbie Wings. Debbie is the founder of DW Consulting. It's a great story. You know, there's a lot of movement going on in the mortgage industry, and I think it's so timely that we have Debbie come on and talk about your LinkedIn profile. A LinkedIn profile is becoming the way in which we communicate and talk about ourselves and really put ourselves out there as professionals. And she's going to give us some great tips. And there's so much she can go into. And I love, more importantly, Debbie reinvented herself and her career. You're going to hear all about it in the Hot Topic segment. So stay tuned into the Hot Topic segment today. And I recommend you share this with many of your coworkers. Many owners listen to this podcast, many senior executives and managers. Share this with your people, because a lot of how you put yourself out there will determine your own success and your business success. And here's the other thing. Investors are starting to look at these LinkedIn profiles. They've been doing it for some period of time. Is who runs secondary? Who runs underwriting? Who runs quality control? Having a strong profile that communicates your professional background and does it in a way that represents you and your company well, it benefits you. So pay attention to the Hot Topic segment. We're looking forward to that. We're pleased to be a part of the Industry Syndicate. Check out all the podcasts on industrysyndicate.com. Also, thrilled to have our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, as well as Finastra, the Fusion Mortgage Bot Solution. We've been doing some webinars with them. Encourage you to check out those. You can go onto their website, go back and listen to those. Also, Lenders One, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative, both these co-ops do a great job of getting lenders and vendors and your peers together to talk about what's going on in the industry and be able to compare notes. Peer data, being able to talk to lenders of your like size, some of the issues you're facing, can make such a difference. These organizations are solid, as well as Community Mortgage Lenders of America, as well as Incelerate. Knowledge Coop does a great job with Ken Perry and his team. Does a great job in keeping you trained and helping you have a learning management system that's a part of your company that is customized and then also can provide so much content. Also, Mobility MMI, the Mortgage Market Intelligence, they do a great job of helping you recruit LOs. Ben Turnink is going to be our guest next week. Also, Modex does a great job of helping recruit. Modex and Mobility MMI, they really complement each other. I encourage you to check out both of these companies. We have an increasing number of our clients that are using both companies, and they see the advantages of both. The interview with Dale Larson that we had on November 22nd with Dale and Dale was really good. Also, SnapDocs, digitizing your mortgage closing to offer better experience for your closing teams. You got to pay attention to when you're working with settlement partners and borrowers. SnapDocs provides a really elegant solution. I encourage you to check it out. Listen to the interview we did with Vishal Ra on September 13th. And also, you know, talk about telling your story, being able to do it and do it well. You know, there's an old proverb that says, let another man's mouth praise you, not that of your own. Success Kit. I want you guys to get to know Success Kit, because what they can do to help you create a testimonial that really improves your credibility and helps get your message out. I encourage you to check out successkit.io. Also, joining us now as a new sponsor is our good friend Brent Emler. We had them on November 29th. Check out lenderstoolkit.com. Let's get over to Rob Van Rathhorst with the MBA Mortgage Minute and see what Rob has for us. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rathhorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, HUD released much-needed guidance around the application of special purpose credit programs under the Fair Housing Act. This announcement is a response from MBA and the National Fair Housing Alliance, who earlier this year called on HUD to clarify that these programs were in fact acceptable under the Fair Housing Act. Now, a special credit program is a program under the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, or ECOA, that a lender creates to help low-income and historically disadvantaged borrowers. These people may not have the traditional requirements needed for a loan or have affordability challenges. So, financial institutions tailor products to meet their needs. However, there were questions about whether these programs under ECOA comply with the Federal Fair Housing Act, a different statute that covers mortgage lending. So, HUD's guidance clarifies that if these special credit programs conform with the Equal Credit Opportunity Act, then they generally would not violate the Fair Housing Act. MBA released a statement in response applauding HUD for this clarification, even though there are a few nuances we hope to address in the future. That said, the issue is a priority for MBA's Minority Home Ownership Task Force, and we look forward to working with HUD in the future. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
I'm so grateful for what the MBA is doing through the HUD programs, through all the programs, all their initiatives to help increase home ownership and do what they can on many aspects, especially when you look at the underprivileged. So kudos to the MBA. So grateful for our partnership with it. Anyway, Rob, good job. Appreciate it very much. Let's get over to Les Parker with the TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets.
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Trading today on the crest of the Fed, it's like magic. Traders continue to wonder if the peak of the Fed's intervention is over. Think about Aesop's fable, The Scorpion and the Frog. The scorpion's nature stings its enablers. The lesson lives in the global markets with its various players, where it's hard to distinguish the villains from the heroes. Since the advent of the financial crisis in 2007 to today, the Fed actively intervened in the market's affairs. Can it stop and return to pre-COVID and pre-financial crisis days? It's a living thing. Is it a terrible thing to lose? It's a given thing. What a terrible thing to lose. These views are my own. Dive into the living thing at tmspotlight.com.
Yeah, that's good. Les Parker, Gary Cantrobone, teaming up to do another great TM Spotlight segment of the Macro View of the Markets. Thanks, Les. Appreciate it very much. You can sign up again for the paid version of the newsletter with the word power. So, appreciate it. I'm so grateful to have health. Man, but someone who is not suffering from health, but suffering from a lack of sleep is our good friend Matt Graham with MBS Live. He just flew in late last night from his son. I love parents that just really pour into their kids at this stage in their lives. And Matt, I'm just so grateful for you to be on the podcast. So sleep deprived. How are you doing, friend?
Sleep deprived, but it's worth it, right? There are worse things to lose sleep over, for sure.
Yeah. Well, you don't get these years back. But anyway, it's good to have you back. What you got for us?
Yeah, it's an interesting time. And first off, I want to say Les's segment is just right on. I mean, a lot of people that I talk to have been wondering this for years now after QE1, and then especially after QE2 and 3, is this just the new way it's going to be forever and ever? Is the Fed going to just always be buying some bonds or reinvesting some bonds, and then maybe stopping for a little bit only to have to get involved again when the next poo hits the fan? And, you know, I think a lot of people would like to know. A lot of people have strong opinions on it. I think there is some hypothetical situation in the future where they could get out. Clearly, they are decreasing their amount of bond buying presently. And we're going to talk in a bit about how they want to accelerate that and the market's reaction. It's kind of interesting and paradoxical. But, you know, I don't know what the implications are going to be going forward, but it's just it's an interesting thing to keep in mind and to watch to see how it unfolds. So we'll get to the Fed being the central point of conversation in the current week. But to set up the current week, we go back to 2 weeks ago when the Omicron news cycle flared up, a lot of concern about that, and a very logical sell-off in stocks and rally in bonds 2 weeks ago. And that was incredibly linear. You can take a chart of stocks, say S&P futures, since that trades overnight, and overlay that with 10-year treasury yields, and they are almost right on top of each other the whole time. Then in the following week, we had several articles and some comments on news interviews from officials saying that, hey, maybe this Omicron thing won't be quite as bad as we thought. That's the gist of those comments anyway. It's not necessarily exactly what they said, but that was the takeaway. And when that happened, you saw stocks reverse and bond yields reverse. And stocks, as many people know, recovered all of their pre-Omicron losses and are sort of hanging out at those levels right now. But the bond market did much better. It did not follow stocks all the way back up last week. And I think that was really notable because we did have a treasury auction cycle and corporate bond issuance adding to that supply side of the market. And that typically causes a little bit of drama for bonds on auction weeks. And then we also had lurking in the background the week before and heading into that weekend, Fed speakers really being blunt about accelerating the tapering process in order to get to a point where they could hike rates quicker to combat inflation that is no longer seen to be transitory. But, you know, Powell in his congressional testimony even said that time to drop the transitory verbiage when we're referring to inflation. And then he also said the things about accelerating the tapering process. I think given all that and given the fact that stocks were moving back in the other direction, oil was moving back in the other direction, and just the general low level of interest rates in the big picture, it's striking and perhaps encouraging to see bonds hold their ground as well as they did last week. There wasn't a ton of important economic data, but the most important report was probably the CPI data on Friday, Consumer Price Index. And it was very well received, given that it came in at the highest levels in 30 years. Those were in line with economists' expectations, so there's a little bit of an explanation for that. But nonetheless, inflation is high, and bonds had a lot of supply to deal with. Bonds are worried about the Fed accelerating the taper. And nonetheless, they leveled off without making any new highs on Friday and actually stayed under Wednesday's level. Oh, yes, and there was a really bad 30-year bond auction on Thursday, and that didn't seem to faze the bond market either. So we're seeing some resilience here, and maybe, fingers crossed, let's be optimistic. But from an objective standpoint, the bond market was more resilient than it should have been heading into the end of last week. Now, this week could be a different story. By coming in as expected, that CPI report really put more emphasis on this week's Fed. For instance, if it had been much higher than expected, then the market would have shifted to forecast or expect that the Fed would be more hawkish, less bond friendly this week. And so we would have gotten some of that movement out of the way on Friday. But by coming in as expected, it sort of makes the Fed reaction that much more volatile because we don't know exactly how they're going to play it. A lot of people think that the Fed is simply going to double the pace of tapering, so increase treasuries to 20 a month as opposed to 10 and increase MBS to 10 a month as opposed to 5. But there are also some calls for just a 50% increase, so taking it up to $15 billion a month in treasuries and 7.5 in MBS. Either way, that's going to accelerate their balance sheet wind down and get them to a point where they can hike rates sooner if that's what they decide they need to do. I think if they do that, they'll do it in a dovish sort of way where they say, we just want the flexibility. We want the latitude to be able to do those rate hikes. And we just don't like to do rate hikes if we're still adding to the balance sheet on the bond buying side of things. Now, one Fed speaker, I think it was Bullard, said, we could hike rates before we stop tapering, but only times I've heard a Fed speaker say that. So I'm not sure how well received that idea is in the committee. But anyway, the bottom line is Wednesday afternoon, 2 p.m., we get the Fed announcement. They're probably going to say something about accelerating tapering. They're also going to be releasing their summary of economic projections, which includes the infamous dot plot that forecasts rate levels that each Fed member is expecting. And usually that produces a good amount of volatility on those four meetings a year where those come
out. Good point.
So
really good.
If you got locks to lock, you might want to make sure they're in by Wednesday. Or if you're a big gambler, you might want to look for opportunity on Wednesday afternoon.
Blow on those dice, roll them if you want to. But man, play it smart, play it smart. One question that just came in from one of our listeners, Matt, for you specifically was, hey, I love your system. Kudos to you for what you do. You discovered you through Lickit On Lending, and we're grateful for this service. One of the things they said he knows you do, most likely, presumably, what is the general flavor from originators out there that you're hearing? Bullish about 2022? Concerned? General thoughts?
Yeah, tempered expectations, right? Every time we have these boomy cycles like we had in 2020 and 2021, then, you know, leaner times ahead, but not so lean that the people that are have the realtor relationships or that have reliable database marketing strategies are going to struggle during those times. Right. And maybe not say they shouldn't be in the industry, but that are not necessarily as dedicated to being in it for the long haul. Those fruits might get shaken from the tree, let's say.
Yeah.
And so that's an opportunity for everybody. But, you know, I think in our community, people are pretty good about trying to keep other people grounded and say, make hay while the sun shines and don't go buy Ferraris just because you made $1 million this year, because you might not next year.
You know, I think it's important that we all keep a level set optics here. I mean, you know, the forward-looking forecast for 2022, pick your poison, $2.5 to $2.7 trillion dollars in origination volume. And who knows where it comes in, but that's where the forecasts are kind of bunched around right now. Look, in 2019, we were a 2.1 trillion market. So if you just isolate on 2020 and 2021, sure, the number looks bad. Or certainly looks challenging. But if you look back over 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, that $2.7 trillion forecast for 2022 is still a hefty number.
It's a great number. Yeah.
Realistic number.
Yeah.
As opposed to all-time crazy numbers from the last 2 years.
So I think Matt's comment around tempered expectation really resonates with me, David, just because 2022 will be the third best origination year out of the last 7 or 8 years.
Wow.
I think additional runs toward low rates are possible. And when those happen, if they happen, then that creates little pockets of mini booms for refis. It's always going to be the case that those who are fostering strong realtor relationships are going to have the most consistent experience. But that we wouldn't say that refi opportunity is dead, especially, you know, niche opportunities that some people focus on.
Yeah. Great commentary. Jack, thanks for jumping in. Appreciate that. Matt, I love the perspective. I love your website. It is just elegant and it is so powerful. And folks, you can get signed up for extended trial without a credit card. I think you should just sign up. This thing is such a powerful tool. Just sign up. Just put that credit card in there and do it. You won't regret it. And Matt, I'm so grateful for you to be a part of the podcast. Appreciate you, friend. Yeah, let's get over to Alice Alvey, CMB Vice President of Education and Training at Union Home Mortgage, with this week's legislative update. Alice, there's so much. We missed you last week.
Thanks. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. And I really did want to start out my segment by just saying all our hearts and prayers are out to those who experienced all the devastating storms over the weekend. It's just horrible. Rob Christman had a link to the NPR video, the drone footage, that was very impactful. So I just thought I'd give a shout out to a lot of us who had a very, very fortunate and prosperous 2021, 22, as the guys were just talking about. So USA Today, I noticed, had a whole list of places that people can donate to, reputable ways to be able to reach out and help if you can't get out there and help. I know we've got family out that way as well. I know my sister was hunkered down in her shelter and they're all okay, but even just being on the fringe of that storm was very frightening. So our thoughts and prayers are out to all of you who were impacted by that storm or your friends and family.
Thank you so much for bringing that up. I wanted to earlier.
So the good news that I have is there isn't any big legislation pending because Congress gets busy with other things this time of year. So I'm happy to say I have nothing big and new to report. Just wanted to touch briefly on a couple of things. I know we keep getting listeners asking if we've heard anything else about the appraisal reduction that Fannie Mae announced during the MBA National Conference. And there isn't anything new. There's definitely some discussion going on behind the scenes at the MBA and along with the agencies. So we're just going to hold our breath until after the first of the year to see if we can get something at that time. This is not the time of the year new big announcements like that will come out. So we'll wait and see. But as of now, I did double check this morning and there's nothing new on being able to expand our use of the 2055. And then just last but not least, I was just checking through some announcements and things and changes that Fannie and Freddie have made. Just so I have something for everybody, check your power of attorney stuff. Really tightened down on this. Really tightened down. I mean, it's got to be natural disaster, medical emergency before you're using a power of attorney. And oddly enough, they'll accept it on a cash out refi, whereas Fannie Mae will not accept it on a cash out refi. So just really make sure you hone in your skills on POAs. You don't want to get that part wrong. So that was just one thing I thought I'd throw out. And other than that, Dave, I'll kick it back to you for my short little sweet segment.
I was on with Mitch Kiter, Alice. And one of the things that we were talking about is one of the things that he's seeing going on. Again, consolidation within the industry. We'll talk more of that with Alan in just a minute. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of that happening, but we're also seeing the state level legislation. And so do you have any commentary about thoughts about the state regulators and their increased oversight of our industry? It came across as almost like this is almost repressive.
Yeah, we are seeing new things come from state regulators. So I'll do some digging. I don't want to shoot from the hip right now, and we'll prepare some follow-up for everybody in the coming weeks.
That would be awesome. And we're also going to get Mitch back on the podcast. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Alice, thank you so much. Merry Christmas to you as well as Matt and everyone else on the podcast. Ben's to say that after each one of the segments, but appreciate you so much for being such a longstanding friend and being here with me from the beginning of the podcast.
Yeah, the last full week for the rest of the year, everybody. Yeah. Cheers.
Let's get over to Alan Pollock. Good to have you, Alan, with this week's weekly update. How are you doing, my friend? How are things in Florida? I was thinking of Floridians. When you guys are down there enjoying the nice temperatures, and we're dealing with 30-some degrees. Not very often we deal with that in Texas, but we do. So how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It was 80 this weekend in North Florida. It was amazing. I was out in the water, and so was everybody else. And today it's a little chilly. It's probably in the 60s, maybe early, late 70s. But remember, for us, it gets cold when the temperature drops like that. Everyone else in the rest of the country that is fortunate enough to have the cold weather, when it becomes 60 out, you know, the convertibles come down and the windows go open. And that's always funny. But Florida's great. And David, I'm happy to hear your voice, and you sound great. So it's good to have you back. Yeah, we got so much cool stuff going on. The industry's a little quiet, just like Alice said. I thought you'd find this quite interesting. I saw this article. Get this. Companies, their printers, all right, are apparently getting spammed by anti-work manifestos. So in other words, the digital receipts, the printers that you find at different companies out there in the world are getting spammed. People are hacking into them and writing things on those receipts that are going to consumers, and it's stirring a lot of eyes. In the world of everything digital, it is a real thing, and you should check your receipt when you go to the store. Let's put it that way. It sounds like there's probably some kind of patch to some type of software. It was on Gizmodo if you want to Google it and check it out. But it says a new report suggests someone has been hacking company printers and making them emit anti-work sentiment. So Google it, check it out. It's really, really funny. David, let's talk about a couple other quick little things. Probably you didn't hear, but home inspection, Zillow is rethinking them, and they just landed an $8 million deal for a Seattle startup, Inspectify. And they partnered up with a company called Fly Homes. It's a two-year-old company. They're brand new. They've taken $8 million from several VCs, and the goal is really to find a new way to manage home inspections. So fantastic area to leverage technology, and I think that's a really cool idea. Cryptocurrency. Have you heard much about cryptocurrency lately, David? So the thing with crypto right now is a lot of folks, and when I say folks, I mean companies, are more easily adopting either payments that are auto-converting into U.S. dollar or that are crypto. If you remember, Elon Musk had stated for a moment that he was accepting you can buy a Tesla with crypto, and then he kind of put that on pause. I think it's coming back. But there's all kinds of stuff with crypto going on. Your Venmo account now has built-in crypto. PayPal has built-in crypto. Well, Walmart, get this. Walmart is ready to start accepting cryptocurrencies. So I know there's a lot of gray area in the mortgage industry with crypto, but there are a lot of assets that people have that with the IRS now have to be declared. There was a loophole that's been closed. So whether it's a borrower's eligibility and their assets in crypto or actually paying for things in crypto, it's going to become a hot topic in mortgage. And there will be some technology, I'm sure, around it. But the crypto markets are not doing so great right now. But I thought that was interesting. So here's a funny one. So we all love coffee, and we all love the jokes that people do with coffee when you go to Starbucks and they make a funny hint with the name. Well, back to David, chatbots and robotic automation and all the cool things that are going on. There is a hysterical Geico commercial. It is a robot and he is trying to do stuff on the computer, and he gets with the CAPTCHA. Even us humans can't do it, right? It's like highlight all the bridges in the picture, and you think you got them all, and then you have to do that five more times. Well, it shows him getting really frustrated, and he uses his laser beams to cut the computer in half, and he's talking to a human next to him trying to get help. Well, they put the name on the coffee, and they at the end of the commercial, they go, Rob Ott, your coffee is ready, instead of robot. So it was pretty funny. If you haven't seen it yet, it's a good chuckle. So here's a tech alert, David, getting away from funny stuff. Next Mortgage News, they stated, and I read this today, there is a 94% year-over-year increase in the foreclosure activity in our market. In November alone, there was between 19 and 20,000 properties that fell into this class. And I say tech alert because if you are listening to this and you are thinking about investing in technology or building technology, this problem is not going to go away. Because if you think about somebody who needs to get out of a house, what are they going to move into? Home prices are extremely high, or they're just in an unfortunate situation. They need to downgrade or get out anyways, and they're trying to ride the market as long as they can, or ride the home in the bank as long as they can. Either way, there's lots of opportunity in different kinds. May not always be helping the homeowner stay in that property. It may be helping them into something else and doing something with that property. But it's a tech alert. Check it out. I don't think that's going to change much. We've had some folks on the podcast, David, that we talked to about technology and servicing and the pre-foreclosure side. I think that's a fantastic area. There's great things going on. More there. Loan quality management, David, to prevent foreclosures. ACES, right? Another big name in the loan quality management side of our industry. Well, they just did a partnership with a RegTech platform. Company's called Winnow. I haven't heard of them, but it is a technology of all compliance and regulatory information made up by a team of attorneys. And this database is now going to be integrated directly inside of ACES. So if you are doing your loan quality management or your post-close QC or your pre-ship delivery, whatever it is with ACES, they just are, I don't know if they finished it or they're doing it. You want to check that out. One more thing, David, to mention on the vendor side, OpenClose, the company I work at, we just launched our native mobile app, native Android, native Apple, and native iPad for loan originators, giving them the freedom to be wherever they want at any time. So consumers all want everything when they want it, right? They want to do things on their own and kind of pull the ripcord and get that help. Well, originators need to be ready and they need to have the same tools. So we just did that at OpenClose. Now, David, so the Moscow method, the only reason I mention it is everyone needs to get prepared for 2022. I can talk more about it next week, but the goal is to think about what you must have, what's nice to have, what you may have, and what you won't have. And if you categorize your 2022 technology plan, you will be able to figure out exactly what it is. And the last thing I'll leave you with, David, is overambitious or overcautious, which is better. And Moscow method is going to help you get there.
Oh, good. Can't wait till next week then. Get to hear about that. So we have to come back next week? Awesome. And again, Moscow stands for, just give everyone it's an acronym. What does it stand for again?
I actually don't know what all the letters stand for, but it's a prioritization method. A lot of people look at it as time boxing, which is, this is a much easier, but it's David, simply must have, should have, could have, and won't have.
Well, I just looked it up and that's exactly it. It is must have, should have, could have, will not have. That's a really important part because I think more and more people, lenders are struggling with that, especially we see consolidation, a lot of consolidation going on in the tech space. Thank you so much, Alan, for being here as you are each week, bringing us wisdom and insights and a little bit of humor. Appreciate it, Fred. Very much. Thank you. You bet. Jack Nunnery, as we wrap up the first part of the segment, any thoughts and wisdom you want to share with our listening audience as we wrap this first segment up?
Well, David, I'm going to be a very interested third party watching Friday's Fed meetings. It really is read between the lines. You know, as Matt was saying, inflation. I mean, there was a fundamental shift in Jerome Powell's words when he kind of closed the lid on transitory inflation. And and basically what he's saying, David, is it's no longer transitory. You know, it's inflation. We've got to deal with it. And I look to see more posturing to accelerate tapering. And then does that move forward that mid-2022 rate hike that the market has out in front of it, David. So I think Wednesday's a big day. Listeners need to make sure that they dig into the FOMC meeting. I think it really sets a tone for what we can expect here over the next 3 to 4 months from the Fed.
Good point, Jack. Keeping us focused on what is probably going to be the biggest news of the week. Appreciate it very much. Thanks for being on here with me and co-hosting this. I appreciate you. Oh. So, Jack, thanks. Appreciate you wrapping it up with me. All right, folks, that ends this week's weekly mortgage update. We take this podcast. Those of you listening live, just stay right here. We'll continue right on. Those listening on a downloaded basis, move on to the next topic. So that wraps up the first half of the podcast. Stay right here as we get into the hot topic.
Folks, I'm excited to introduce to you Debbie Weems. She is the founder of DW Consulting Solutions, LLC. She's located in Florida. I met both Debbie and her COO, Chief Operating Officer, Davey, at the MBA conference in San Diego, and they had a booth set up where they were helping people with their LinkedIn profiles. And folks, I think this is such an important topic because more and more investors, more and more employers, more people are going to LinkedIn to be looking for your background, your experience. And I think it's so important on how you tell your story well. And be honest with you, folks, if you look at most of the LinkedIn profiles out there, the story is not being told well. So, Debbie, I'm excited to have you join me on the podcast today.
And I'm excited to be here, David. Thank you very much.
Again, I love what you're doing because you're helping people tell their story and tell it well. And I think that's where many of us fail. We can tell someone else's story. We can tell various aspects of what someone else does. But we oftentimes have trouble talking and representing ourselves well, especially on something like LinkedIn. So, Debbie, that's what we're going to be talking about today and sharing with our listeners and how they can tighten up their LinkedIn profile. But I hope it leads to a conversation with you and your team. So let's get started. But before we go there, tell us a little bit about your background, let our audience get to know you just a little bit. What's your background? Where did you come from? How did you get into this?
Thank you, David. I appreciate that opportunity. So I'm a New Englander from way back. I have been in Florida now for over 40 years. I still follow all the New England teams and a few of the South Florida teams as well. But I am a diehard fan of a lot about New England. I miss this time of year with the fall foliage. It's just a great time to visit. I did not get up there this year because we went to California for that conference instead. It's all good.
You live in West Palm Beach, Florida, so not a bad place to go. A lot of nor'easters get down there to eventually find their way down there, but it was beautiful. I had my wife and daughters did a fall leaf tour up in your old stomping grounds, and it's beautiful. It's just magnificent. So your career-wise, let's talk a little bit about your career path. How did you get to where you're at?
Well, I had to start with a little company called Raytheon up in Waltham, Massachusetts, I was out of college. I was an admin assistant, secretarial-type work. Eventually, that led me into the hospitality business up in Maine with restaurants and bars. Basically, I'm a networker from day one. Eventually, the winter of 78, I don't know how many people can remember that, it was a blizzard, drove me south. And that's when I came down to Fort Lauderdale. And I've been in Florida ever since. I do get back to New England at least once a year. But I spent 9 years in the hospitality business in Fort Lauderdale area. And then I came up to Palm Beach County, to West Palm Beach, and 23 years here in the nonprofit industry. So I've always done marketing, media, PR. And the last 7 years of that career was fundraising. So I lost my job at 57, first time ever. And I was kind of all of a sudden, what am I going to do next? It was the crash, 2008. And I really didn't know what I was going to do because no one was hiring in the nonprofits. I was fully qualified, but it was just a really bad time to be unemployed. And I stayed in that mode for almost a year and a half. So went through lots of changes. I found LinkedIn as a job seeker at 57, and it went on from there. I created my business to show other older, unemployed adults, professionals, how to use LinkedIn for job seeking. And honestly, when a couple of those people I was meeting with at Starbucks with our laptops came back to me at our next gathering and said, I got two interviews because of what you showed me on LinkedIn. It was like, poof, that was my epiphany moment.
Yeah. And you've helped so many others and so much feedback. I went through it. I've got a really good profile. As Davey said, your LinkedIn profile is well done, but here's some tips. And the tips you guys came up with were over the top, even for those of us who have been very intentional on developing a good LinkedIn profile. But I think a lot of people look at LinkedIn and it's just for finding a new job. There's so much more we're finding that LinkedIn is involved with. One of the things that I'm finding is I'm knowing an investor that is looking to put money in a company, invest literally in equity. I have other companies that are looking to buy loans from the particular company, and they're looking at the bios, the backgrounds of what is posted on LinkedIn. Sometimes they check Facebook, but LinkedIn is such a good professional site to go to get data points on someone's background. So with that in mind, I want to talk a little bit and have you open up by sharing what you've seen this do to enable business owners, employees, I mean, the full gamut. Obviously, it will help you find a good job. You just talked about that. But what are some other examples of what you've seen this has done for people?
Absolutely. And it is the number one HR site as far as people needing to transition. And we do work with professionals all the time that are in that mode. But business owners can really leverage LinkedIn to their advantage with all sorts of features that have recently been introduced. But we just celebrated 10 years of doing this work, David. And even over the 10 years before these wonderful new options came out, you're able to differentiate yourself because of those profiles and the content that you can build in them. And here's where a lot of LinkedIn members are a little bit lacking. They don't realize the importance of the about section. That's the summary. That's where you get to tell your story. And you started off with how difficult that can be for people. Well, I'm a prime example. This has happened since we saw you in San Diego. I hired a professional writer to do my story for my website, even though I've personally written over 500 summaries for LinkedIn profiles, and I think I do a pretty good job for other people. But it is really difficult sometimes for people to write about themselves. So we take advantage of every opportunity to use things like the cover story. That's a new 10-second video that if you're using this feature, when they land on your profile, they'll see a 10-second video. It's like a teaser. And then when they click on the headshot, they'll see the whole video, and it's whatever you want it to say. We are changing ours frequently. That's one way to stand out because a lot of people get a little bit shy about holding a phone in front of themselves and recording. LinkedIn pages, those are like mini websites. And every business owner should have one. And right now, there's over 5 million LinkedIn pages. So we work with people to help build out their, I still call it the company page because that's what it is. And then there's video opportunities. My goodness, last week, they just enabled video on messaging. So you can set up a video chat. And now they're rolling this out, so everyone doesn't have it yet. But I have a lot of counterparts in the UK and Australia, and we all keep each other apprised of how that rolls apps going. So it's coming if you don't have it yet. And you can voice message people through the inbox on LinkedIn, and that makes you stand out. So there's lots and lots of different opportunities to make yourself climb above the competition. And we think that's what we're best at. We like our clients to show up on page one of those searches when people are looking for what they provide.
Talk about getting to page one. Is that really the objective on these search results? Or is it just when they find you? Because we're using LinkedIn on our new website as the way, rather than doing an about us, about each of us individually, we're using LinkedIn. We connect it to LinkedIn because I think that's the most effective tool to do that. What should be the objective that everyone has when developing a really good LinkedIn? Is it to be found in a search?
We feel that every LinkedIn member should have two goals. Number one, have a complete professional keyword optimized profile. And that is the key. Keywords are your friend. And there are over 800 million members.
Wow.
Trust me, there's a lot of mortgage bankers in there. And in order to get them to come up to the top of searches, it's all about keyword optimization. You have to know what your keywords are, and it's not rocket science. These are the skills and expertise that are offered by you and your company. And we do help people get those together. But generally nowadays, people have a pretty good feel for what their prominent keywords are. And we make sure that those words and phrases are in all of the five basic fields on a profile for the search engine. I'm talking about inside LinkedIn. But after doing this for 10 years, David, we know about 14 more places in your profile where you want to have what we call intentional repetition of those keywords. And that's how we get our clients on page one. Now, every search result has 10 people on a page. So you don't want to wind up coming up in a search on page 3 or 4. No one's going to find you there. So we feel you should look good and be found on LinkedIn.
Well, look good is one of those things. So let's start with the profile picture. You do a lot of advising on profile pictures. You see some of the craziest profile pictures out there. You go like, what were you thinking? And but there's others that look really stiff and they look so professional. And what are the tips?
First of all, have one.
Yeah, first of all, have one. Yeah.
I know that sounds obvious, David, but I have actually worked with CEOs that did not have a headshot. Thankfully, that doesn't happen too often anymore these days. But when I first started 10 years ago, absolutely, they just didn't understand who was finding them and who they're exposing themselves to. It's the world. Headshots. Okay. A professional headshot, obviously, is the best you can have. But as far as the dynamics, and here are some tips that a lot of people don't realize. They call it a headshot for a reason. If someone has, and we've seen it all, if they have a full body shot in that field that's supposed to be a headshot, when you come up in a search, that picture, whatever image you use in that field, it's reduced by 50% on a search result page. So if you've got a, even from the waist up shot in that field, your face is going to disappear. People are not going to click on you. They're going to click on someone that they can see clearly. So basics, face the camera, dress the way you would for work. And a lot of people are working from home. It doesn't necessarily call for a suit and tie. It all depends on what your customers are typically going to see when they meet with you, whether it's on Zoom or in person. Thankfully, in-person things are coming back, thankfully. But you want to face the camera. You want to have a pleasant smile. Basically, no hats, no sunglasses, no one else in the picture. We still see a lot of that. And typically, a lot of times, husbands and wives will have a team for doing real estate. I get it. They work together. Yeah. They're a couple, but they each need to have their own profile and their own headshot. And what else? I love outdoor pictures. If they're going to do professional photography, a lot of photographers will take you outside into nature, anything green behind you. Of course, we're on the edge of the Atlantic Ocean here, so you can do a lot with nature. But the idea is have a professional headshot that looks good, that presents you well, and that doesn't make you look like you're in jail. We've seen those too.
And it has to be relatable. I look at some of these pictures and they have the classic hand on the chin and I go, they're professional, but they just don't connect. It seems cold on those. I mean, so that's one thing I've also noticed. Okay, so let's talk about the importance of a banner. Should it tell your story? Should it be your logo? What are some guidelines that you recommend to make a banner effective?
Well, first of all, again, have a banner. A lot of people don't realize the importance. Yep. No, the default banner is quite bland. It's a tricolor gray, whatever. Not very interesting. Okay, I will key in on yours. This is a great one. And I'm sure Davey already gave you this tip. But here's the thing. You are now able to include a call to action on this field. Uh-huh. And Microsoft bought LinkedIn 4.5 years ago, and they've done some great changes. One of the best things they did last year was open up and start to allow people to add to the banner, website, phone number, email, tagline, whatever you'd like. Be careful that you don't crowd the image too much. And the only thing I would advise you on here is get right across the bottom under the word past. You can have a website or an email or your phone number. That becomes what we call a standing ad for business owners so that they don't have to go searching for the best way to reach out to you.
It's a great point. By the way, listeners, if you want to go to my LinkedIn profile, put in David Licken. That's how you search for me, which is another place I want to go. A lot of people, you see their name, but you see numbers behind it. They don't realize they can go in and uniquely identify their name. And I think it's so important. Like mine is linkedin.com/LinkedIn/David Licken/. When you look at that, there's a lot of people that have numbers behind that.
Yes, it's called optimizing your LinkedIn URL, and you did it perfectly. And how those numbers and letters get jammed up at the end of your name is the minute you create an account on LinkedIn, LinkedIn assigns you that number. And until and unless you optimize it, which basically means getting rid of all that stuff after your last name. We feel that the URL should end with first name, last name, no spaces, no caps, just one continuous David Licken. That's it. And if you wanted to include MBA, that's fine, or PhD, that's fine. But really, the search engine is going to have a much easier time finding you above your competition or other people. And I'd be curious, I haven't looked up how many David Lickens there are on LinkedIn. But when you eliminate that stuff at the end of your name, it's called optimizing your URL, and everybody can do it. You tap on that contact info link underneath the headline, and that'll take you into an edit mode where you can do whatever you want with that URL. Some people do put their business name instead of their name. Honestly, your name is your number one keyword on the internet. Yeah. The minute you're born, the minute you get a driver's license, your name is all over the internet. So that's what we go with.
That's really excellent. When you're talking about some of the other tips that you had, tell us a few things that most people don't know about LinkedIn. The one you already mentioned is now they've added a number of new features. I love some of the new features they've added. And David did a great job of bringing this to my attention. I've got to go back in and change my photo number one. There's a, I just showed her several pictures. She goes, yeah, I would use this one. It's a much better one. I haven't changed it yet. And then the video that you can put a brief video introduction. I love that. I love what you did on yours, by the way. I think yours is a great example of how you took advantage of this. Talk about some of the things that people don't know about LinkedIn. Sounds like there are an increasing number of them.
Well, I think one of the interesting things, David, is that LinkedIn started in 2003, almost the same month as what's now called Meta, Facebook, and Mark Zuckerberger and Reid Hoffman. Reid Hoffman's a co-founder of LinkedIn, and they actually knew each other back then, but they had very different ideas of what they were trying to do. It's been fascinating to watch the past 18 years of growth between the two sites. Obviously, Facebook is the kingpin for members. However, that said, LinkedIn is definitely the leader for professionals. So it is now the largest professional network online with over 800 million members. That's something we like to tell everybody. Now, out of the 800 million members, people get wide-eyed, and I'll say, now to bring you back to earth, about 32 million are active on LinkedIn. And that means they're on LinkedIn about 3 to 4 times a week. But that's still a pretty good network to get into for business. Yeah. And the other stat that's really fun, even after 18 years, they are still adding more than 2 new members per second around the world.
Oh, that's amazing.
And that's why we love what we do.
The pool from which you can be consulted to is just ever, ever expanding. 2 members per second. Wow. Pretty rapid expansion, pretty strong trajectory. So when you talked about some of the other new features, any insights on some of the things we can anticipate? I heard that they're now, like, we do a podcast. This podcast now can be featured on LinkedIn, I've heard someone say. Is that accurate?
Yes. And that goes along with the ability to publish newsletters on LinkedIn. I don't have those 2 new things. LinkedIn Live, that's what you're talking about. Yep. That enables you to do live podcasts. I don't have it yet. And I don't have the ability to publish newsletters. But in the past couple of weeks, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have run into this on LinkedIn. You're getting lots and lots of invitations to sign up for people's newsletters. Right. That feature is being rolled out in the US right now. Again, I don't have it yet, so I expect it any day. But it's a little bit annoying how they're rolling it out because there's just an avalanche of invitations. Sign up for this newsletter, sign up for that newsletter. And there's only so many hours in a day. So I'm very selective, but I think it's another great opportunity for another avenue of marketing.
Well, if you're a borrower looking for a loan program and you may subscribe to a loan officer's newsletter for a period of time because it is relevant to something you're entering into, a real estate transaction, buying a new home. So you're wanting all the articles and everything. Then once you close on the deal, it could possibly go away and go from there. For those that may not be aware, there's a free membership within LinkedIn. I guess there's various levels, are there not? And talk about the advantages of different levels.
When everyone signs up initially with LinkedIn, they're on the free basic membership. And we do encourage members to stick with that level until they've exhausted every possible option. LinkedIn is notorious for what we call burying really valuable options. So we make sure that our clients are fully aware of everything they can get for free. Now, next step up is called premium. And the biggest 2 advantages of upgrading to premium, which if I'm not mistaken, it's around $45 a month, you get unlimited searches. And on the free profile, you get a limited number, and they will not tell you how many searches you get in a month. But eventually, if you're a prolific searcher, like most salespeople are, you're going to get stopped and on the free membership, and LinkedIn will say, Debbie, it looks like you might be recruiting. Why don't you advance to our recruiter membership? When in fact, I'm just prospecting, and that's what every salesperson does. And of course, they're going to do it prolifically when they find out all the filters that you can use on that free membership. So we recommend exploring everything you can do on Basic first, the free membership. And we do advise people all the time. Premium gives you unlimited searches, which is great for sales. And it also gives you 90 days worth of who's viewed your profile. Mm-hmm. And that's really important
really
to
valuable.
See
yeah.
who you're attracting to your profile. You want to make sure it's your target audience. All of that is done with that keyword optimization we spoke of recently. So that is the first thing we do with every client we work with, no matter who they are, what level, what industry. It's all about coming up in the top of those searches. And I think there's 4 or 5 now paid levels
oh, really?
Of membership, all the way up to recruiter, which of course the large companies now, almost all of them will buy into the recruiter membership for their HR departments because it is very, very robust. But you can also get into Sales Navigator, which
right.
is again, a terrific level, again, if you're going to use all the features. It's been an interesting journey, David, because we will work with a lot of people that are on premium. And first of all, most of them don't know what they're paying for. They just felt that a paid membership was a better membership to have. It is, as long as you're using those options that you're paying for. So we make sure that people are using what they're paying for on the various level that they're on. Honestly, all of our coaching is based on the basic membership or premium. And I know enough about Sales Navigator to be dangerous, but we have several very trusted associates, particularly one in Canada, one in New York, that are specialists on Sales Navigator. So if somebody's on that level and they want help, I will freely refer them out to those couple of people that we have. And of course, we know people overseas as well. So it comes down to this. What are you doing on LinkedIn? What is your goal? Who are you trying to get in front of? What is your business? What kind of services do you offer? These are all things that we cover initially with every client so that we can have a feel for the best way to guide them.
LinkedIn has a code of conduct and how you present yourself. If you could give us some ideas of how they're enforcing it, and are there some boundaries that we should be aware of that we could trip over accidentally?
Thank you for asking me that. This is my favorite subject. We're all about professional behavior on
yes.
LinkedIn, and there has been a bit of increase, for instance, spammy invitations. People that are trying to sell to you, as we call it, right out of the gate. We feel that that's probably the most inappropriate behavior on LinkedIn. And I understand why it's happening. When people find out how targeted the searching is and how you can get right in front of who you need to sell to, it gets rather exciting. And it's no longer, I can't blame the younger salespeople for doing this anymore because it's a lot of other people as well of all ages, but they're too anxious to sell. And yeah. they know they've got a great target. And this is where my gray hair comes in, David. We're always going back to sales 101. You have to get to have a relationship. You need to take the time to build the know, like, and trust with a prospect before you start trying to sell to them. When they invite me and say, hey, Debbie, I noticed you're a coach. Did you know you can prospect on LinkedIn? We can show you how to do that. And I'm like, I don't think they even looked at my profile, which leads me into another really important point. The user agreement is very specific about not incorporating scraping software programs, third-party apps into LinkedIn's data. And that's a big reason for how a lot of these automated invitations are coming in. I actually got an invitation from a young guy and he was in the States and he said, hey, Debbie, would you like to generate 100 invitations a day on LinkedIn like we're doing with this one? He actually said that in his invitation. I took a screenshot. I sent it into the help center and I said, hey, you need to check this guy out. I don't hesitate to do it because it's against the user agreement. And those are the people that are spoiling it for a lot of us. And mm-hmm. the first step on that was all of a sudden, if you started to invite somebody to connect, you might be greeted with a little phrase that says, this member demands that you know their email. So there's a privacy control people can choose to cut down on the spam. And then that was last year. And then recently, last couple of months, LinkedIn instituted a new rule. You cannot invite more than 100 people a week on LinkedIn, no matter what level you're on. So if you're paying for Sales Navigator, where you used to be able to do lots of invitations with LinkedIn's blessing, because it's a very specific setup and it's very professional, but now it's $100 a week for everybody. And that's kind of unfortunate, but it's one of their ways of curbing the spam.
I just brought up my connections page. I have 24,384 connections at this moment, and I have 5 pending, and they're from all over the world. And some of these are definitely spammy. So go to this point. You're starting to make a point. I just want to tell people that maybe listening and saying, I got to get home and listen to this again and go to the page they're at. We went to the connections page. Okay, go on. Sorry.
So to get there, on the navigation bar across the top of the screen, you click on My Network, and that's where LinkedIn will show you any outstanding invitations that you need to act on. And I like to click on See All 5 or See All 10, right to the right of the word invitations, because it lays them out in a different format that shows you when they invited you. And it also expands on any that are personalized, so you can read the whole message.
Right.
But here's the point. Almost anything and everything that's posted on LinkedIn, either by an invitation or a post, has three little dots in the upper right corner. And you can see that on his invitation from a fellow named Stephen. If you tap on the three little dots in the invitation, it gives you an opportunity to right away anonymously report the person's invitation as inappropriate. Okay. I love that feature. And LinkedIn does pay attention. And here's the real kicker, and I don't think people understand it. When you start throwing out spam like that, it only takes 5 members to click that inappropriate report, and you get restricted. And that's when you'll go to log into your LinkedIn account and you'll see this big 5-word red phrase that says, this account has been restricted. And that's it. They don't tell you why. You can't get in. You have no access to your account. And that's when people call us to get out of what we call LinkedIn jail.
And can you get out? I mean, I think a lot of what happens is, I did this one time. I hired someone to expand my network. I needed these, but I gave the profiles, I went in, and they tripped over all the things, and I got suspended for a little while, or I got put in LinkedIn jail. I'm going, what did I do? I called and they said, did you hire someone? I said, yes. Who did you hire? And they said, we're putting that person on notice. So I think there are some things there. People will inadvertently, the point of it is once you see the power of LinkedIn, you go, man, I need to connect with everybody. And you start going at it aggressively. I did that and I got in trouble. This was a number of years ago, back when I was back at the 500 connections. Now I'm up over 24,000. So I think there are some things that people can do to get out of jail. Or is it just a time frame? You just need to be on the best behavior for a period of time.
No, they have a very orchestrated step-by-step process to, first of all, prove your identity. And it is done by showing front and back of your driver's license in the U.S. or passport. And I do have people that email me and they're a little freaked out. I can't believe they're asking me for my passport or driver's license. And I'm like, listen, there's 800 million members. They want to make sure that you're not somebody that's trying to shut down somebody else or get into somebody else's account, which is another whole issue. Being hacked, it does happen. It happened to me about 7 years ago. And I teach people how to use the site. My account was hacked because I did not enable a privacy control, because I thought it was a pain in the neck. Oh, it's 2 more clicks to get into my account. I'm not going to bother with that. And my ID, it's basically ID theft, changed my password, took me off of LinkedIn. My page, my profile was gone for 6 days. And that was not good as a new business owner. People thought I was out of business. It was a horror show. So we try to coach people appropriately.
But on that one, how can they fix that?
2 ways. They go to settings and privacy, and then they go down to 2-step verification. So it's on the left rail, as they call it, under sign in and security, right at the bottom. Make sure you turn it on. And it means giving LinkedIn your cell phone. And they will simply text you a code every time you go into LinkedIn. And you either have the code or you don't. Most people have their cell phones glued to their body. So it's pretty easy to grab the code and off you go. I always thought that was a bit of a cumbersome way to get into your account. And I avoided it. Well, not anymore. After that one time, that's all it took was one hack.
Oh, wow. So I'm enabling that now. I did not have that enabled because I have staff that help me manage this. And how does that work?
Well, that is the caveat. So you're going to get a text with a code. I also have admin help. And when that comes through, I know that she's trying to access my account. account to do what she has to do to it. Mm-hmm. So if you're willing to be able to pass that code on to whoever's helping you out with your account, it works. Now, if that becomes problematic because you have more than one person helping you or right. something like that, then you're probably not going to be able to enable this because you might be in the middle of a recording like we are now. Somebody's trying to help you out with your account and you can't exactly act because that code is only good for 2 minutes.
Oh, really? Yeah. So I'll leave that part there. Folks, just pay attention to this. This is such a powerful tool. You need to protect it and also protect your identity. I think this is an important one. You've already touched on a number of new features that we can expect in 2022, some of which are being rolled out. Let's review those real quickly here. The newsletters is one of them.
Right. The ability to publish newsletters right from LinkedIn. And also the other feature still being rolled out is LinkedIn Live. And that enables live podcasts that are right off of your profile. People just have to come to your profile, start watching, and it's automatically a replay is enabled as well. So that's pretty cool. I'm still waiting for that.
Yeah, so good. I love the services. I love your passion. I love also, Debbie, on how you reinvented yourself and how you've done it so successfully. That's as much a part of the story as anything else. I think a lot of people get to 57 is what your story is. I had 50 when we sold our interest in our last company. What am I going to do? That type of thing. And when you get older, people are not interested, but I think that's shifting too. But there are all these opportunities to reinvent ourselves, and LinkedIn is such a powerful tool. I'm so delighted to have you here, and I can't wait for all our listeners to get a hold of you. I know many will. And how is the best way to do that?
Well, I have one of those strange Scottish names. So finding me on LinkedIn, they need to know how to spell my last name, which is W-E-M-Y-S-S, like Sam, it looks like Wemyss. Actually, they can go right to our website, dwconsultingsolutions.com. Right on the homepage, they can access a link to schedule at their convenience a complimentary 15-minute profile review. There are three of us that do these day in and day out. There's no strings. It's how we get people pointed in the right direction with a few immediate edits to their profile right over the phone.
So powerful. Kathy Thomas, who works with me in the consulting business, and myself went through this at the MBA. We are blown away with the value and what came out of that 15 minutes. It was so, so powerful. Listeners, I encourage you to get a hold of Debbie and her staff. Look at your LinkedIn profile. We want feedback on this particular podcast. We'd love to hear that you've actually done that. So please get a hold of us. Debbie, thank you so much for being here, sharing some quick tips. Every time I talk to you guys, I just want to dive in. I got to do more. It's such a powerful tool. Applaud you for reinventing yourself because it's to all of our advantages. Thank you, Debbie. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, David. I appreciate the opportunity.
Say hi to Davey and the rest of your team.
Will do. Thanks.
I hope you enjoyed that interview. There's so much information in there. Again, warehouse lenders, investors, more and more companies are going to your LinkedIn profile to find out about you. How are you being represented? Get a hold of Debbie and her team, and I encourage you to do so soon as possible. We're become partners together, and I'm really grateful for the relationship. Folks, so good to have you be a part of the podcast. Sorry, it ran a little extra long today. It was worth it because of the information we had to put out. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, CMLA, Lenders One, Incelerate, Mobility, MMI, Modex, MBA, the Knowledge Coupe, Mortgage Collaborative, SnapDoc, Success Kit, and now Lenders Toolkit. Great toolkits out there, folks, and we're thrilled. Next week, we got Ben Terling of Mobility MMI and also Mobility RE. Again, they have two focuses with the real estate side and on the recruiting side. So look forward to having you back here and listening to our live interview with Ben Terling. So good to have you with us, everybody. Have a great week. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.